Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Now, here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Keith Thompson back with us. He is an author. One of his books, Angels and Aliens, UFOs in the Mythic Imagination. He's an independent journalist, explorer of truly exceptional and supernormal mind-body capacities as potential indicators of the future evolution of human nature. The San Francisco Chronicle described Keith's book, Angels and Aliens, UFOs and the Mythic Imagination, as the most fascinating book written on the subject. That's quite an honor. Keith is at work on a new book that I will tell you the working title. It is called Coming Ashore to a Larger Earth, and here he is back on Coast to Coast. Keith, welcome back.
Well, my friend George, it's great to be back. I'm delighted to have the opportunity to talk with you at this stage of this new project. And let me say, if you will, I've done a lot of media over the years. Your old friend and your late friend and colleague, Larry King, Larry King Live.
Yep.
I've talked to a lot of people, and it's always been as a journalist about stories I've written about other people. And this is really the first time in my life when I use the first-person pronoun, I, not just to talk about the story that I've written that's gotten me on this show or that, but it's finally through a sense of guidance that I'm ready to talk about and write about my own near-death experience, which, by the way, I've shared with people in my life discreetly over the years. I've learned that it's important to be the feedback you get sometimes is so hostile and skeptical that you just learn to keep quiet. The first time I really went public with my near-death experience to the world was when I did your show last.
That's right.
Discussing the UFO phenomenon in June. So I'm back, and that kind of set the reels in motion to really get serious about this book. So what I'm trying to tell you is I'm now talking about myself. The book is not only about my near-death experience, but it's going to place this important phenomenon hopefully in a context that can really help people understand a larger sense of reality.
Great, because when you were in your 20s, you almost drowned, and we almost lost you.
Yes, we did. You would never have known me. I had gone to Hawaii from California, where I was living, with some friends. We ran the Honolulu Marathon in 1978, so I'll cut to the chase and say that I've seen my 60th birthday in a few years since, feeling great. Loving life, loving afterlife, because I think they're both the same place, so that's what I'm going to talk about. But went to Hawaii to run a marathon, which I did. The next day I was feeling heroic. We were all feeling heroic, as you do when you finish like climbing a mountain or running a marathon. We went to Sunset Beach of Oahu, where the signs are very clear. Be very, very careful about these waves. In fact, probably not go in. I said, that sounds like what I'm looking for.
Oh.
And so we played around the edges, and the edges got further out in my case. And long story short, the combination of big waves coming in from behind toward the beach and something called riptides, which I didn't know anything about, being a kid from Ohio originally. That's a pretty strong combination. You're being pulled out and you're being smashed from behind.
Yep.
And long story short, this cycle went on and on. I kept getting further pulled out. By the way, let me tell anybody listening who likes to body surf, when you are being pulled out by riptide, swim parallel to the beach. I didn't know that at the time because the entire area has not necessarily got these. So I was fighting against a force that I couldn't win against. It took me further out. Finally, one wave hit me very hard. I said, I'm in trouble.
Were you scared, Keith?
I was. The body-mind complex called Keith was afraid of dying.
Yeah.
The survival instinct was very strong. And so I was totally identified as that. I was Keith. I was that mind-body complex, so to speak. That seems a strange way to refer to yourself, but based on what I'm about to tell you, you'll see why I made a distinction between the mind-body complex and who you really find out that you are. I finally said I could die. There was a lot of very clear awareness. I got smashed to the bottom. I said, I'm going to die. And the next memory I have, George, is of rising, and I didn't know where I was rising from. I thought maybe rising to the top of the water, I could continue, but it wasn't that kind of rising. The next thing I saw was a 360-degree, and I mean not because I was turning in a circle. I saw everything that there. I was out of my body.
Yep.
And I'd never had an out-of-body experience, but I knew I was because I looked down and there was a man in the water struggling, and that man was me. I saw my friends on the beach. I felt tranquil, calm, serene. My good friend Mary, George, it was as if I was at least 200 yards out. The body was 200 yards
out.
Did
the friends realize that you were in distress?
They all did, yes. They've been calling me.
In
fact, Mary told me, she said, Keith, guy, let's all be careful. These signs are serious. And she had run the marathon too. But I wasn't looking to put my life in danger. I'm a pretty good swimmer, but I didn't know about these conditions. My friends were completely panicked. They were agitated and worried. A couple of people came out on surfboards to try to get me. In each case, the boards slipped away. I was at least to the body, I'm above. The body is struggling. That body is at least 200 yards away from the shore. And I heard Mary say to our friend Moore at about the same level of volume, I'm speaking to you right now. Mary said, I told him not to go out. I told him it was too rough. Why didn't he listen? I saw her, and by seeing her, I was able to be right next to her in consciousness.
Right.
And I spoke to her. I said, I'm fine. I'm really fine. This is great. She couldn't hear me. She couldn't see me. Next thing I'm back in everywhere. Now, I could go, there were other elements, classic elements of the near-death experience. There was a rapid panoramic review of my life. There was a sense of everything fitting. I felt never more at peace. There was a light and a tunnel, which again are common elements.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, this is 1978, George, was only 3 years after Raymond Moody wrote his famous book, Life After Life.
That's right.
Keith Thompson had never heard of the near-death phenomenon. Oprah Winfrey had not made it famous yet. And it took a couple of years after this to really get a sense, there's actually a phenomenon, which that's what I went through. I didn't know that at the time. And I sure found out that when I told people when I got back, my one friend Moore said, well, buddy, I thought you just about ate it out there. And I looked at him and I said, I did.
You did.
I think I died. And I could tell from his expression and everybody else's expression that I was coming across as a delirious human being. Over the months that followed, people said, well, did your life pass before your eyes? And I would say, oh, my God, finally someone understands. Yes. And I described it. And I could tell from the look in their face, no, Keith, we meant that as a metaphor. You need therapy. You need help.
They didn't believe you, did they?
No, they didn't believe me. And so I'm not a publicity hound. I did not see myself as anybody who had been saved by the light. I knew, by the way, though, that what I had experienced had taken me to, I knew I didn't doubt that I had seen something larger, that I had seen more of reality as it is, but my attempts to describe it to other people caused me to keep it to myself.
How did you get plucked out of the ocean? Who saved you, basically?
Okay, here's what happened. I mean, I could try to, so here's what happened. I go to a place, I'm not raised as a devout Christian. I should make that clear. Wasn't raised as an atheist. We were nominal Episcopalians, which I think is probably a redundancy. We didn't get much theology, no warnings about Satan or the importance of being good. Just be a nice be a better person. I always found the sense of being in church kind of holy and sacred and beautiful, however, and I always liked it. But so with that in mind, I don't come from a strong place of believing in heaven. I went to a place that is very much like what Christians call heaven. I saw beings of light that were beyond description. I saw and interacted with my maternal grandparents, our family babysitter. I saw a host of creatures I'm not entirely certain were human, but did not seem threatening. They seemed like elves and dwarves and so forth. Again, these kind of details did not make for much credibility, but in any case, I had an interaction with a profound sense of presence that seemed to have been with me all of my life. And this presence said, "What will you choose?" And I realized that the decision was mine, and that the decision was whether or not I was going to stay here in this infinite place of unspeakable beauty, or whether I was going to continue with the choice that I had made to be born. George, I had the first time in my life, I'd never read an esoteric book in my life. I knew that I had chosen to be born. I knew that I had chosen my mother. I had part of my life review was seeing myself being held by her, a very clear memory. So I thought it's a question of staying here now or returning to a choice I've already made. And I had a profound sense of bringing, of the question I asked of myself finally was, would it be possible for me to bring this back there? And I had the realization that the soul incarnates as us precisely to have the experience of human form. I got that.
Right.
And so I said, the only way I can find out is to find out. And the presence to whom I was communicating said, permission granted.
They gave you that option to come back.
The option to come back did not send me back. Many near-death experiences are, you must go back, it's not your time, and people scream, and, well, you know, they don't want to leave. I found it beautiful, George. I was reconciled to being there. I knew this was where everything is. Everything is whole and free, and it's the source. I was closer to the source. By the way, the presence, this guide said, what do you love about life? So I did a part of my life review was to say, well, I love running that marathon. I love my friends. I love food and laughter. And the presence said, are you done with that? And I reviewed it, and I said, no, I want to travel. I want to speak. I want to teach. I want to learn. And then he said, then what will you choose? I repeat that. And I said, is this reality? Could I bring this back? Is this, and the realization was the only way to know is to find out. And when I said that, the presence, in effect, communicated telepathically, permission granted. And the next thing I knew, George, I was in my body, seeing through my two eyes, in a fairly calm part of the water, approaching my friends on a black shoal of rock.
Were you coughing, gagging, or anything like that?
Well, I had my body was kind of cut up from the rocks. They pulled me out and sat with me, and they were so glad I was saved, and I was too. I was very disoriented. I was in shock. It is a trauma. Oh, yeah, it is a trauma. I mean, there's almost no near-death experience that is not traumatic. The occasions in surgery, automobile accidents, if you survive that, the mind-body complex has, the nervous system has taken a huge blow. The other side of the trauma, though, is having seen a beatific vision of possibility that I was able to bring back, but not immediately. The metaphor I want to give you, George, is like a near-death experience is like a giant information-rich file that you download on your computer operating system, and it takes a long time for it to unpack, unzip. We all wait for those big files that we need to update our system so that it can become functional. Well, my near-death experience, and I'm talking decades ago, was this big file that has been downloading ever since, not only in terms of recovering and integrating and assimilating, but there was information that is still being given to me. Not specific information. People often say, well, how many angels are there and tell me. No, I don't have information like God whispered in my ear. But I was witness to a sense of the process of creation and metaphysical teachings that, of course, you come back into this limited realm of dimensions in your body, and you don't, it's a kind of amnesia. So I've been in the process of overcoming my amnesia about this, not strictly speaking, literally amnesia. I never lost memory of having gone through it, this experience, but the teachings were distant, and I also learned, as I said, it's just not wise to talk about this until I found a few friends. And by the way, then within 3 years, Kenneth Ring, the great near-death researcher, who's now in his 80s and so forth, we became friends. His books began to be published. I got the benefit of, and so do many near-death people who are listening tonight, have the benefit of enormous amount of research now that makes it clear this is a common throughout human history. It is a common experience. It's not common for the person who goes through it, but I really have a clear sense that the soul chooses the human realm precisely because it is a new opportunity for the unlimited soul to experience limitation. That, for the soul, is a learning opportunity. Just as for the body, it's a learning opportunity to get in touch with the soul. So the movement is between the terrestrial and the celestial realms back and forth. And that's what I'm writing about in this book. I call it Coming Ashore to a Larger Earth, George, because I returned to a larger Earth. I believe the realm that I visited, that I was in, that some would call heaven, is the same. Is a larger dimension of what is always here. The dead are close to us, George.
Would you have been content, Keith, to have stayed if you had taken that decision?
He said this beautiful, loving, unconditional loving presence says, what will you choose? And I realized it is my choice, and the choice is whether or not to continue the incarnation that I'd already made a choice to incarnate, and I'd made many. We have all made many. By the way, that's part of the complexity. Is this a one-time deal, as Christianity, Judaism, and Islam believe, one lifetime, and
or many,
and, a disembodied state in a spirit body forever, or is it reincarnation? I can't reconcile those two, but I don't struggle with the two because I think, at some level, they are different games. They're different forums for this I believe reincarnation reincarnation, multiple lives, is a reality. I had chosen this life, but I'm not an expert on this. But I believe both stories are true. Something like heaven, I encountered relatives and friends. Some in physics might say, well, those were just holographic projections. I know all the various theories.
Did they try to get you to stay, or was there nothing there?
You know, they walked me down a beautiful, unbelievably music, flowers. The light is beautifully brilliant, but not blinding. And there was clearly a line. That there was a knowing, and when I say I, at this point, I is not separate from anything, but the sense of an awareness called I knew that crossing that line would be coming back.
That would have been it.
And that's when the presence, this guiding, loving, unconditionally loving presence, which is God or my soul or some form of my true guide, moved close, just enveloped me and said, what will you choose? And I was never really given the invitation to stay. I thought that if I did stay, I'd have to be invited, and I would become part of infinity. But instead, I had this recognition that and I have no regrets, George. There are moments in life that are tough. I've had injuries, I've had pain, I've had disappointments, but I can't think of a single moment I thought, well, I should have stayed there.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern, and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
In the recent history of documentary filmmaking, one scene stands out above all. The hot mic bathroom confession of Robert Durst in The Jinx. Now the person responsible for that moment, Sareb Kaufman, stepson of the victim, friend of the murderer, star of the documentary, for the first time ever, shares why he believes you're watching the furthest thing from the truth on this exclusive episode of Murder Homes. Listen to Murder Homes on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.